All right. What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another day of SaberSims DFS Office Hours. Today is Friday, November 15th of 2024. And looking ahead here, we have a 10-game NBA main slate this evening. We have a 4-game college football slate. Then we also have a 5-game NHL slate. So it should be a fun day of DFS. Those of you who are new here, welcome. My name is Andrew, one of the coaches over here at SaberSim. This is a show where we go over how to use the SaberSim app, answer any and all DFS-related questions. Get your questions in one of three ways here. First off, send us an email, support@sabersim.com. Second, post it live in the YouTube chat. Third way, post it in the Office Hours channel in our Discord server. If you're not in our Discord and want to get access to that channel, there is a link in the description of this video. You also get access to our similar channels, individual support channels, and you get access to the rest of the SaberSim team. Just can't say enough good things about the Discord. But with that said, we do this show Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, and we do this show on Saturdays, tomorrow, 12:30 p.m. Eastern. And we have our Build Review show today at 5 p.m. Eastern. We have a ton of people signed up for that, so it should be a nice long show. But with that said, let's get SaberSim pulled up here and let's jump into questions. So, kicked off a build during the intro. Any additional questions that come in the live YouTube chat? So, first question here. New to SaberSim, here's my understanding so far. SaberSim runs thousands of play-by-play simulations capturing a range of outcomes where each player's performance affects others, creating natural correlations. From there, it selects the top 5,000 performing lineups and simulates each one 100,000 times in your target contest to identify the best rosters based on metrics like ROI, win rate, cash percentage. First, would you sign off on that description? I want to make sure I understand how it works under the hood, at least at a high level, to get the most out of it. Second, if that's accurate, why set exposures, lineup, rules, groups, etc. at all? Okay, good question. So I sign off on most of this. The only part I would make a small correction is this part where it says, from there it selects the top 5,000 performing lineups. So that part is inaccurate. And the reason for that is because the way we are selecting lineups is we're not just building the top projected lineups for every single user in our user base, right? What we're doing is we are randomly sampling the sims each time we build a lineup. So for instance, like you said, you know, there's like say 5,000 game sims of each game on the slate. And then there are, you know, 10 games on this slate. So every time we build a lineup and we'll do a simple example, you know, the sim diversity slider is going to determine how many sims we use each time we build a lineup. So if sim diversity is on 10, which is an easy way to understand it, we are going to take a single game simulation of each game on the slate and then play that out as a slate simulation and then build the best possible lineup, right? If sim diversity is at 9, we might be taking 5 sims of each game, and then the players, how they score across those 5 sims, we average that out. That becomes their fantasy point total that we grade off of and then build the lineup off of. So then we are doing that every time we build the lineup. So think about it like this. You know, we're going to take 5 sims out of 5,000 for game 1 and then 5 sims out of 5,000 for game 2. And these could be any sims, right? If you actually put it in a combination calculator and said, hey, how many different ways can I get 5 out of 5,000? And then you take that to the power of however many games are on the slate, and that number gets exponentially high really, really fast, which is why SaberSim users don't end up with the exact same lineups. If you and I kick off a build right at the exact time, we are still not going to get the same exact lineups because of the way the sim diversity slider works. So we're not just taking the top 5,000 lineups. We are randomly sampling the sims and building the best lineup based off of the sample that we pulled in each and every time we build a lineup. So that's the big thing to be aware of there. Second part is, you said, if that's accurate, why set exposures, lineups, rules, groups, etc. at all? So the honest answer is that, you know, we don't really recommend doing any of those things. The reason that they are available is because people have opinions. People want to tinker with their lineups. You know, they do research. They want to apply those concepts. Maybe they see trends that they want to apply. So the exposures, the lineup rules, all of that stuff is not something you need to use, right? Just because it is in the app does not mean you need to touch it. It is there for to allow people to customize their lineup sets to their liking. So it is a tool in your toolbox, but it is not a tool that you have to use just because it is there. So think about it that way. All right, really good question to get us started. Next question, if you make a projection change to certain players, do live sims see how close you came to your projection or the original projection that SaberSim had for that player? So a little confused here, but I'll just talk about the way live sims and stuff work. So let's say that you are using custom projections, right? Well, after the first game's lock, and then you come back into SaberSim and you want to, you know, late swap or do things like that, the builder is going to switch, if you're using the contest sims, to using live projection for the players whose games have already started, and it will continue to use custom projections for all the games that haven't started yet, right? As far as the lineup building, it doesn't really matter if we're using live projection or not, because those games are already locked, right? You can't take players in or out of those lineups. It's really just kind of all about the lineup performance at that part and the lineup sorting and the lineup grading after the fact. But the lineup building, you know, what we're doing when we're building is, say you had three players start. We are locking in those players and we are still randomly sampling the sims. And then once the sim is finished, we're like, okay, look, this lineup has five roster spots available. It has this much salary and it has these positions. Based on the sims that we got, what is the best combination of five players that are under that salary that are available for those positions that we can put into this lineup? And regardless of how the other players are doing, that's how the late swap is solving the rest of the lineup. And then it isn't until the lineups are in the pool that we start grading based on the live projection. You run the contest sim, you do whatever. So that's how the live projections are interacting with late swap, with contest sims, etc. All right. Hope I answered that one right. If I didn't, let me know, but took my best stab at it. Next question. If you enter tons of contests, MME, single entries, etc. on, let's say, a big NBA main slate, is there potential value in doing two different contest builds than sims instead of just doing one and sorting by prize pool / doing unique rank autofill? In other words, split the contest 50-50 into different builds. So the biggest thing I'll say in regards to this is, if you are using Minimax exposures, you should definitely do this. This has been a topic we've talked about, where in autofill, your lineups are going contest by contest, right? So if you have a minimum exposure to any player of any value, 10%, 20%, 30%, doesn't matter, it is greater than zero, right? So if you have a minimum exposure greater than zero, that means that the builder is going to put those players into your single entry lineup. And then if you have a max exposure less than 100, that is going to exclude a player from going into a single entry lineup, because the exposure is either zero or it is 100%. So that could be one reason to do a single entry. Now, I'm not doing that, but I'm also not using Minimax exposures. So even though I'm not using Minimax exposures, I'm still doing one build. You could split it up if you want to. I don't see a ton of value in doing that unless you're being hyper specific with, like, okay, for my single entries, I'm doing different rules, or I'm doing different sliders, or I'm doing different salaries or filters. Or, like, if you want to approach those contests differently, then yes, do a second build. But if you are just doing a second build to do one without any major changes, then I would just probably end up keeping them together. So kind of depends on your strategy a little bit, but those are the things that you want to be thinking about when trying to make that decision about whether or not you want to do it. All right, next question. Hi, team. I play the Monster pretty much every night on FanDuel, which is a 618 max entry tournament. I'll usually do a build as soon as I have the starting lineups for the 7 p.m. games, run a contest sim, and play the highest ROI lineups. I then perform a late swap for every late game on the slate. Once starting lineups have been confirmed, the highest ROI lineup has done a good job cashing, but I feel as if it's a bit too chalky to take first place. I know that in a 600 entry high stakes field, you don't have to go too far off the board, but I'm wondering if I'm approaching this correctly and just on the wrong side of variance, or would I give myself a better shot at a tournament win if I sacrifice a bit of ROI and play a less chalky lineup? Not sure if you want to discuss such a long-winded question on the show, but would love to hear your thoughts. I'm totally happy discussing this on the show. So honestly, the first thing, right, this is a really, really tough contest. These high stakes, you know, this is like the flagship high stakes contest, right? If you go and you look at, you know, what players in the lobby are playing this contest, maxing it out, these are going to be like some of the most winningest players, right? Utikau is there, you know, Papagates, you know, McLovin, Giant Squid, all the crushers are, you know, hammering these contests. And it is a very tough contest to start with, right? My honest advice to you would be like, hey, if you can play other contests, you should start with those. Even if it's like, I think they have like a $44, you know, mass multi-entry, you know, you're going to get more lineups in like a contest like I would honestly be starting from like a ground up approach, right? I like to sort from entry fee lowest to highest and just work my way up, right? I think you could take an approach like that. You know, they have $50 single entries, $100 single entries. There are a number of other really good contests that you can play prior to playing this one. And then another thing I would be considering, right, is they do run a lot of satellites to like the monsters and stuff. So those could be ways of getting entry fees to the same contest that you know you're already going to play for a cheaper price, right? A lot of those satellites overlay. They run like their Wednesday flagship satellites all the time. You see like the jungle. Could definitely get access to some of those contests for a cheaper price. But ultimately, I think that, you know, I don't think you're doing anything wrong based off of the descriptions I'm hearing. You might want to look at ways to adding value to your lineups. I know FanDuel is a little bit harder since you don't have contest flashback. I've talked to people who play on FanDuel who literally go into contests like this and go and click through every lineup and look at the stat combinations and see what type of lineups players are playing. And, you know, if you're playing a lot of action in this contest every single day, like you might want to take the extra time to go and study lineups from that point of view, or study the best players in the lobby. Like, hey, what players are maxing this contest out and how are they constructing their lineups, and really dig deep there. Right. So ultimately this is a pretty tough contest. I would highly recommend shifting up your contest selection. You know, I was talking with another user recently who was maxing out flagships for NHL and they were kind of struggling. I'm like, hey, you know, it looks like you have access to lower stakes. You should really take this like lowest entry fee to highest approach. And they shipped a lower stakes contest and, you know, beat out 8,500 other entries. Right. And I always say, like, you could be the 10th best poker player in the world, but if you're sitting at the table with the other nine, you are now the worst player in the game. So you got to find games where you have an edge against your opponents. All right. Good stuff. Good stuff. Keeping it rolling. Hi, I had a question about the ownership buckets. When we run contest sims, it uses the specific contest ownership bucket, correct? So changing the ownership bucket on the projections page does not affect the sims, basically only changes the ownership leverage in each type of contest bucket. Good question. So it changes two things. So first, you're right. Changing the ownership source from the My Own column it will affect the sum ownership of the lineup. So if you just come in here and you see the own is 188% for this top lineup, that is reading off of the values in this table. If I adjust these values to a different source, the sum ownership will change. The other thing For non-Ultimate subscribers, it will have an effect on your Saber score calculation. So Saber score is using adjusted ownership as a variable. Well, that is looking directly at the adjusted ownership in this table. If you change the projection source, it will change the adjusted ownership, which ultimately affects the Saber score calculation. So Saber score, ownership, summary statistics, and leverage are the three things that change when you adjust the ownership in the table. It does not have an effect on what set of field lineups are selected for your individual contest sims. And you could test it. You know, you could come in, you can go to the contest tab with your entry file uploaded, look at the source that's selected, come to your build, change the source, go back to the contest tab, see if it changed, and it won't change. All right, next question. What's up, Andrew? Would you please show a build for both multipliers and also satellites? I'm interested in seeing the process and sorting method used. Thanks. Yeah, really quickly. Let me check if you are on contest sims or not, so I can make this as specific as possible. You are on contest sims. Okay, got it. And then it looks like we got a question here from Larson. Let me get this one queued up next after Adams. All right, so Dark Horse, who asked this question, is on Ultimate, so they have the contest sims. So honestly, I wouldn't do anything different in the pre-build, right? Let's assume you upload your entry file. So say you're playing this $42 Mega Millionaire satellite, right? So I'm going to create a manual contest sim for it here. So the biggest thing to remember, right? It doesn't matter whether or not you use, what's the word I'm looking for? ROI or win rate, because we're giving first place 100% of the payout. So ROI and win rate are effectively the same here. So you don't need to worry about switching it from one to the other. So as long as you have your contest sim set up, you saw that the field lineups was set to winner take all, which happens automatically. Great. I would run my contest sim. And then let's say I put two entries into that, right? I'm going to come in here. I'm going to set my lineups to two, which would automatically happen if you had your entry file loaded up. And we're just waiting for the contest sim to finish. So I'm going to set up a average ROI metric, which I like to have here. And then make sure my sorting metric is correct. Two lineups in this $42 satellite. Great. So now I'm going to start adjusting my mini uniques, right? So I'm at 290.9 average projection, 168. ROI. I'm going to jump to three, see what three does. Great. You know, metrics didn't change. That means my top two lineups have this many players different already. Let's jump to five. I went from 290.9 to 290.1 and went down 8% ROI. So that means I'm playing not the top two lineups, right? I'm playing lineups one and lineups nine. I would be fine with this, right? These lineups are, very, very different from each other. They're sharing three players across the two lineups. It looks like I'm assuming Nikola Jokic is out tonight, which is why we're getting so much projection for Jamal Murray and DeAndre Jordan at 3K salary is starting. And then maybe there's some injury on Orlando with Jonathan Isaac projected so much as well. Not 100% sure. But aside from that, right, everybody else different. So, keeping that like core group of players based on good value, good news, and then mixing it up otherwise. But this is really it, right? It's okay to use ROI for your winner take all. You don't have to switch to win rate. I wouldn't say I'm doing anything special for these contests that I'm not doing for my GPPs. All right. Adam said, so does that mean when you get something like 80% Bears DE, like on Sunday, you're okay not touching that? Is there a cap on ownership per player you have for NFL or NBA? Good question. So I think it's fine to cap stuff, you know, if you want to, right? I on like a Sunday played too many slates, and I honestly, I don't care. And I mean that in like the most, the best way possible, where it's like, I am trusting SaberSim with the exposures that I end up with. And I'm doing all of my work. Like, hey, I'm setting my mini uniques. I'm setting up my, my rank by metrics. I'm putting in my filters. I'm doing all these different things. And then it's like, I'm trying to give the builder the best inputs possible. And then I'm like, okay, with my inputs, give me the best lineups. Right. And I don't even look. So, you know, that comes from probably working here, trusting the tool, having success with it over the years that I've gotten to that point. But I think risk management is a very good value add. And if you see, hey, I have 80% bear stacks and that bothers me, I would definitely go in and change it. Cause like the last thing you want to do is submit a set of lineups that make you uncomfortable, that make you feel uneasy. And then when it doesn't go your way, you're like, I knew I should have adjusted that. I knew that was wrong. If you feel like that way up front, you know, make the change, right? You kind of want to get to a point where, like, regardless of what happens, you're comfortable with your lineup set that you submitted, and you don't wish that you had made any other changes, right? So I think risk management is good. I think if you see that and you want to change it, you should change it. So I just don't have that like review step in my own process, because I play like 25 slates on like a Sunday and I just got to like move really fast. So kind of just a different approach, really. All right. Next question. Does increasing the team total on the team stacks tab give more opportunities or overall projections to the players on that team? For FanDuel NFL, I'm wondering how to get more of a team in the Sims if you think they are going off, specifically 49ers. And then second question, which is related to NBA cash. We'll go one at a time here. So team totals are a really good way to target a team because they have a cascading effect, right? So let's say that, you know, I go in to NFL on Sunday. And I'm just hopping over there. So let's say I go into NFL. And I'm like, you know what? I think the Bills are going to go off. I want to increase Josh Allen's projection. Well, increasing Josh Allen from 21 to 25 doesn't have an effect on the rest of the team. There isn't a cascading effect when adjusting an individual player on a team. The difference here is if I go to team stacks, I go to Buffalo, and I change their points from 24 to 30, and then I click apply, and then I go back to the players tab. You got to go to my projection gear icon, switch it to SaberSim adjusted. And then I go and I zone in on Buffalo. And I go to all. Now this is going to have a cascading effect on the entire team. All of the team's projections are adjusted. You can see their original, then you can see their updated, right? Cook went from 15 to 18. Shakir went from 15 to 16. You know, Matt Collins went from 4.6 to 5 points, right? Like all these guys. We have all of our simulations for the game. Well, when you adjust Buffalo up, what we start to do is we start to just ignore Buffalo's lowest scoring games until we get to your new total. So whatever total you've set, we're trying to get that total to be the average. So we will ignore all of Buffalo's lowest scoring games until that mean starts to move closer to your total. Now, there is a cap on how many game sims must be available in the pool to sim from. So like I've talked to people like, hey, you know, I've adjusted a NBA team from 150 points to 200 and their points didn't change. It's like, yeah, well, there's like a cap on how many games that we have to use. So even if you keep increasing it, the total is not going to change, right? So you got to be aware of like that one thing if you're going super, super far in either direction, but the cascading effect of the team stacks is better for targeting a team as a whole, as a stack. All right, next question. NBA cash-based question. I see the optimal in cash in NBA a ton and duplicated massively. What adjustments can I make to differentiate versus the optimal without sacrificing projection? So cash is super interesting, right? Duplication in cash is actually not a bad thing as far as I understand. Now, I'm not a cash game expert here, but it is my understanding that cash games, duplication is okay because you actually don't want to be that different from the field. What you're trying to do is you're trying to beat out 50% of the field. It doesn't matter if you're playing a 100-man double up. It does not matter whether you're in first place or whether you're in 49th place, right? You're going to get the same amount of money. So what you don't want to do is you don't want to be too different from the field. So duplication in cash is a lot more common. Also, because if you're using Saberson-based projections, right, you switch your build mode from sim to optimizer. If you and I ran the same build on the same projection set in optimizer mode with no randomness, we are going to get the top projected lineup the same because Saberson is solving a math problem of like, hey, how many points can I get under this salary cap? And there's only one right answer to that question. So in cash, you will see duplication a lot more because it is solving a knapsack problem. I don't think you want to sacrifice too many projected points. You don't want to think about getting too different from the field in cash, as far as I'm aware. All right. Those were our first round of questions in the Discord. You're going to jump over and hit some of these YouTube chat questions. Berkeley said, how likely are dupes between two guys using contest sims and Saber Sim for the same NBA 150 max contest? Should we be taking any steps to avoid dupes like in Showdown, assuming the minimum change to projections? So honestly, the best way to answer this question is to always go back to a past slate and just look, right? So if I go to yesterday's, or actually 2 days ago, because yesterday was only a Showdown. So 2 days ago, go to NBA, go to the main slate. You go to the contest 10. So I pull up this contest. I go and look at people who entered 150 lineups. I can even sort by sim ROI. And then I can see what the average dupes for these, for their lineups are. So most of these are zero. We see some ones. So this tells me like, hey, duplication. And if you're 150 maxing NBA classic slates, duplication is not a huge factor here. And even if it is a factor, even if you have average dupes of one, you could still grade out with very high sim ROI portfolios here. So I wouldn't be worried about duplication for NBA classic slates. Now, if you go and do something like this, I've seen it for like college football. There actually is quite a bit of duplication, even on a college football main slate. So college football, you would want to take a different approach and account for duplication, right? So you should think about duplication from a contest level, not just a Saber Sim user level. We talked about that at the beginning of the show. It was our first question. If you missed it, check that out. But you shouldn't think about duplication versus Saber Sim users different from other users in your contest. You know, we have our max challenge that we do for SaberSim for our promotion, right? Even in the mini max, I think SaberSim users are only taking up about 15% of total entries. And that is across every mini max that they open, and they open like three or four of them. And we're talking, you know, hundreds of thousands of entries. And that is a contest we are telling our users to play through a promotion. And so that tells you like, hey, you know, the overall SaberSim population is probably a lot smaller across all contests in the lobby. All right. Aaron said, can you do a short explanation to what is a good ROI number and bad? So ROI will change based on the contest you're playing, right? Like for instance, for an NBA minimax, you might see the top ROIs in a contest be somewhere like 10 to 20%. And then we go and look at like a minimax for like NFL, we might see ROIs in the 100% range, right? So ROI is always relative to the contest you're playing. So you can always go and look at a past contest the same way we're doing right now to see like, hey, you know, what are common ROIs for the contest that I'm targeting, right? This is actually a good consideration for contest selection. If you're trying to debate between playing like the $4.20 max and the 50 cent 150 max because they're about the same amount of dollars, $75 versus $80 in entry fees, I would go and look at the sim ROIs achievable and decide what contest to play from there. So like, for instance, when you do that, because I've done this in the past, the sim ROIs achievable in the $4.20 max are typically higher than what you see in the 50 cent 150 max. So like, if I had to decide, hey, I have this much money, where should I put it? I would put it in the $4.20 max because your long-term sim ROIs are higher in that contest than the smaller field 150 max. Samuel said, since we are trying to top optimal using the optimizer, does it matter if I look at the top 10 same way as I choose just one instead? Thanks. So I don't think it's a big deal to go a little bit further down in your pool if you're trying to build one lineup. I've talked about this where I will, you know, say I need one lineup. I have a satellite ticket, something like that. I will build three lineups. And then I will adjust the uniques. I will try to find three lineups that are similar aggregate metrics, but have some differences in players. And then I will play any one of those three. I'll just unique random, you know, one of those three into it. So, you know, for me, like, what's the difference between a lineup that's 150% ROI, 149% ROI, and 148% ROI, right? It's not that different at the end of the day, which is why I'm fine playing any one of those three lineups. And I'm trying to, you know, find some differentiation there. So I think that approach is totally cool. Samuel says, is it possible to have a positive ROI in the free DK contest? If you think about it, it's impossible to have a negative ROI because you are spending $0 in entry fees to play it. So your worst case outcome is neutral ROI. So I would always play the free contests if you see them. All right. Good stuff there. Let me take one more pass at Discord here. And looks like we're all cut up. So appreciate everybody tuning in. I'll be back in about 25 minutes for our build review show. So until then, everybody, take care. Good luck. Thanks. Bye.